Hi, I'm Richard, the founder of 10 Adventures, and this is the 10 Adventures podcast. Each week, we talk to real people about real adventures as they explore this incredible planet we all live on. Hi, it's Richard. Today's episode about trekking in India is a great episode with a ton of information. Unfortunately, the audio is not ideal. Both on the guest part, it's a bit too quiet, and on my part, it's a bit overblown. We're going to fix this for future episodes, but I just wanted to let you know I'm sorry that we didn't get it exactly right on this episode.
Today on the 10 Adventures podcast, we're going to go on a journey and explore the Himalayas, and we have Akshay Kundu from Trans India Holidays to talk to us about trekking in the Indian Himalaya. Welcome to the podcast, Akshay.
Hi, good morning, Richard, and good morning to all your listeners.
First thing, everyone knows about trekking in Nepal, and I feel like trekking in India isn't as well known. But, you know, India is famous for the diversity, you know, the culture, the food. But for you, what do you think makes trekking in India so spectacular?
I'll answer your question with the myth breaker first, that people consider that Nepal is well known. I'll give you certain statistics. In 2019, 8 million people arrived in India between April to September, which is the main trekking season, either in Nepal or in India. At the same time in Nepal, it was 1.1 million. So you can see the vast difference when it comes to the arrival of foreign nationals in India or Nepal for the trekking. But nevertheless, what India makes it special is the trail in itself. As you mentioned, the diversity. You're always guessing on your trail that what's the next scenery, because the kind of rainfall we have, unlike Nepal, the trails have the green, lush forest to snow-capped peaks, to the monasteries, to the local people, the different kind of food. You're able to see each and everything what I just mentioned in a single trail, unlike Nepal. So this is the beauty when it comes to the Indian trails or trekking throughout from Ladakh to Arunachal, which is the biggest Himalayan range India covers, which is of 2,400 kilometers. So you can imagine the kind of scenery changes from starting from Ladakh till Arunachal Pradesh, which cannot be seen anywhere throughout the world when it comes to the trekking.
Yeah, no, it's a massive, massive area. When you actually look on a map, it's enormous how much of the Himalayas are in India. You know, people are familiar, again, in Nepal, tea house trekking. You know, you're staying in little family-run tea houses every night. Is that possible as well, trekking in India, or is it mostly tent-based?
No, very much possible. Again, in Nepal, people call tea houses to the guest houses these days. What we call is the village homes. That's what the difference is, the main difference. We call them the village homes, they call the tea houses. The originally tea houses used to be a place where all the old people from the remote places used to sit for a drink of tea. That's it. But to give you a fair bit of idea, we have an added advantage when it comes to Nepal while staying on the trail. What is that? You get to stay in the local people houses. You get to interact with them. They stay there for a year. They eat there everything. For a year, they store their food for 6 months. So you get to know their experience, how they live in that kind of place for almost a year, where the temperature goes minus 20 degrees also in the winter. So this is the best experience you get while trekking in India, especially in the region of, let's say, Ladakh, Uttarakhand, some parts of Sikkim and Arunachal Pradesh. Kashmir is a little lively place when it comes to, because it's lower in the altitude compared to Ladakh, Uttarakhand and Sikkim. So when it comes to Kashmir, you don't get to stay in the local villages, local places, because then they have a lot of guest houses these days. So there's the difference when it comes to tea houses that you mentioned. But then, like I said, you get to live with the local people. That's the best part about it. At a certain level, when you are about to reach almost at the mountain peaks, you have to stay in the camps, in the tents. There is no other option.
So you mentioned a few of the regions. You mentioned Ladakh, Sikkim, Kashmir. What are kind of the main trekking regions that are in India?
Again, it's all about the outlook that one has. But let's start with the Kashmir itself. One is the Kashmir itself, which is earlier it was a J&K, in which Ladakh was also a part of Kashmir only, but now it's a union territory. So Kashmir is separate, Ladakh is separate from last 2 months. So one is Kashmir, second is Ladakh, third one is Uttarakhand. Garhwal is a part of Uttarakhand, which I'll be discussing. Then there is Arunachal Pradesh, the last part of India, which connects with us to the China and Tibet. And then there is Sikkim, with lower down to the Arunachal Pradesh. If I start with Kashmir, let's say, Kashmir is at almost 1700 meters, the main town, that is Srinagar, where you arrive through by air. Again, but it is still connected with the roads. But the best possible way to connect to Srinagar through a different city is by air, which is at 1700 meters. Few of the famous treks you have in Kashmir is Pahalgam to Sindh Valley, then Pandar, and then crossing from Srinagar to Zanskar, which is the entry of South Leh, the closest to Srinagar. What's special about Kashmir, I would say, is it's not a mountain. It's not a hill. It's a valley. So that's the huge difference when people try to understand. It's not a mountain. Don't confuse yourself. It's a beautiful valley, lush green valley. All throughout, you'll find a lot of vegetation throughout. No rocky mountains like Ladakh, which is very close to it.
Kashmir, is it more like, you know, walking in a forest, or is it just, you know, is it all agriculture where people are attending the land, or is it kind of a jungle? You know, what can people expect for trekking in Kashmir?
So basically, like I said, valley is basically defined with vegetated mountains covered through forest. So it's half forest, half open land, barren land of vegetation, along with some rivers flowing through it. So this is what gives the mix of Kashmir.
Trekking in Kashmir, are you trekking from village to village and kind of getting to see the different culture and the different foods that as you move through the region?
Let's say you go from Pahalgam to Sindh Valley. So Pahalgam, you reach by road. From Pahalgam, you start your trekking every day, like 4 to 5 hours of walk. And then you reach to your next village where you stay with the locals, eat their food, or otherwise, if you have any preferences, things can be arranged. So basically, it's like you said, it's from village to village and reaching to a certain point and coming down the other side.
Interesting. And then you mentioned you can walk from Kashmir to Ladakh. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, that is called Padam to Zanskar. It's one of the very famous trekking routes, like one of the most ancient trekking routes and very famous. Padum to Zanskar. Padum is basically at the border of Leh and Kashmir. So you start from Padun, it takes almost 10 days to reach Zanskar. And Zanskar is an enclosed valley. There is again a very sweet story behind Zanskar. Majority of the people living in Zanskar, men are above 6'1 in height, 6'1", and all the women are 5'8". It's something to do with the water, they say. But it's again a beautiful valley, and you arrive at the Zanskar River, which flows into Indus in Ladakh.
What are some other treks in Ladakh? You know, that's an area that, you know, I've seen books and seen photos, and it just seems absolutely stunning. What are some other famous treks in that area?
I'll start answering this question by putting you up this, that to the world, Ladakh is the hub of trekking. Why is that? Because first, it has been known to the outside world from a very long time. Secondly, you have majority monasteries in Ladakh, though the biggest monastery the second biggest monastery in the world is in Arunachal Pradesh, Wodila. But the oldest monasteries is in Ladakh, in the whole world. Not even in Tibet, which is the epicenter of Buddhism, let's say. But because the Buddha who resided in India, he gave this road to the India to have Buddhist structure, which started in Ladakh itself called Lamaism. Ladakh being the hub of trekking. There are almost 113 itineraries or programs or trekkings that you can do in Ladakh, starting from the easy level to the most challenging one. The most famous to the world, or the most famous you find on internet these days, is Markha Valley Trek. The interesting thing about Markha Valley is it starts with the grassland terrain and you enter later on to the Rauki Mountains, which in itself is very pleasing because you are not expecting from lush green to suddenly a snow-capped views. So this is an interesting mixture of this trail. And it's very easy for the beginners as well. Again, something I wanted to discuss early, but now I'm touching upon it. In India, the trekking, it's just not for somebody who is trained for the trekking or who's an adventurous one. anybody can come into Ladakh and do the trekking, even the beginners who have no idea of how to trek. It's just a simple walks every day.
And so for Marka Valley, is that one that goes to very high elevation, or is that one that's not going to require a long time for acclimatization?
You don't need long time for acclimatization, but then again, it's our practice when anybody who enters Ladakh by air, we give them 2 days to acclimatize to Ladakh itself, the altitude, which is at 3,700 meters. But Marka Valley doesn't go very high. It just is restricted to 4,100 meters, from 37 to 4,100 meters. So you're taking a jump of 400 meters only, not much.
If someone's, in India already, how do they get to the starting point? Is it a long bus journey? Can they fly directly to the starting point?
There are many ways. You can fly out, you can take a train till Kashmir, and then again take a road route till Srinagar till Leh. Or then there is another way. You can enter Ladakh from Himachal, which is the most scenic road journey in India, from Manali to Leh. It's a 2-day journey, but it's one of the most scenic journeys because you're crossing two passes in that.
It sounds fantastic. In Ladakh, is it going to be different food from what people are used to if they've only spent time in Delhi or other parts of northern India? I know a lot of people, when they go to India, they really go there to try all the different food. What can people expect up in Ladakh?
It's again on your choices, but there is a local food always there to serve you through local people. But Ladakh is basically divided in a lot of different challenges. Like I just mentioned, it comes from the most easy part to the moderate to the strenuous. For example, there is one expedition which is called Nunkun. It's at 7,077 meters, which is quite high. That's why we call it expedition. But when you come to Ladakh, you can one thing experience is the happy faces all around, bowing down to you with smile and asking you to come to their home and have a little chat. So this is all throughout Ladakh. All the local people are always there to help you with their hands held, like it's a general practice in India. We say namaste. So it means we welcome you at every step. Second, like I said, there is a hell lot of to see in Ladakh. You can experience the national parks. We have two biggest national parks in Ladakh, which shows you snow leopards and white tigers too. And at the same time, it comes in the trailing route. You don't have to go to the other paths just to experience it. If you choose, for example, Lama Yuru sector, which is again very famous in Ladakh, you start from Indus River, you go up to Upang Top. It's a name given to a top where you can see snow leopards as well. Coming back to the food, the local food is very, very much based off the flour and wheat. The chapatis that you get, it's basically a basic food that they serve with some kind of dal, and mutton is quite famous there because it's a cold region. So a lot of people love eating mutton there, which you can too.
It sounds incredible. And if you look on a map, it's so far north in India, it's, kind of in between, northern Pakistan and northern China. How remote is it? Is this a place where there's lots of tourists and you're going to be on trails and there's lots of people around? Or can you actually kind of still get out and, get away from tourists and get on a trek where you're not, you're still kind of discovering this beautiful mountain area?
It's a beautiful question. Ladakh ends at Karakoram Range, which is just next to Himalayas entering Pakistan. On the top end of northeast is where we meet with China border through a lake called Pangong Lake, which is very famous for Indians and a lot of tourists. One third of the lake is in India and two third of the lake is in China. Coming to your question of the scenery in Ladakh and basically how it steps down and whether you're able to go to the remote places. I would say the main city, the Leh itself, is not remote anymore. But once you get out of Leh, it's almost remote. So if you go, let's say you go to Lama Yuru, Dixit, Stoke Kangri, all these places are very remote. But yet again, there is a certain population where you can go and interact and sit with them and have discuss about anything, maybe even play cards and some of their local games. Otherwise, if you go on a trail from that side, it will be remote. You can explore yourself. There would be people to help you in between. which kind of people you get on the trail is, we call, it's a very special term, we call them Bakarwar, people, basically people who run shepherds on the mountain. So you'll get to meet them. All day long, what they do, even in winters, they take their sheep so that they can get some kind of food on the road and get them back every day.
Moving east, we have Uttarakhand, which I don't know anything about trekking in that area. Can you describe a little bit? And it's, you know, if you're looking at a map, it's right beside, just west of Nepal. But can you describe a little bit about what trekking in that region is like?
Uttarakhand is one of the very big states in India. It's a huge area and it's not that densely populated compared to Himachal and Northeast. Yes, Uttarakhand shares a border with Nepal, and a lovely part about that is that people living in that border area crosses every day to Nepal and come back. Same goes with Nepal. People come to India and go back. It's a shopping center for both the countries. So people go on. You can see that. If you're there, you can see that. That's the best part about it. Uttarakhand being such a big area and heavily densulated with a lot of forest and huge rainfall. So like the kind of program we discussed earlier, Valley of Flowers, one of the most beautiful programs India has to offer for the world, is in Uttarakhand. And it's one of the most popular itineraries and programs in the world. People know about it. And same stretch continues till Rup Kund and Gomukh. So basically, Uttarakhand is a very spiritual place for India. It's not a birthplace, but it's again, it's a center of Hinduism in itself. A lot of ancient temples are situated in Uttarakhand. One of our holy river, which is Ganga, flows through Uttarakhand and enters Uttar Pradesh. Now, I'll give you a basic. Earlier, Uttarakhand was a part of Uttar Pradesh. And later on, it was taken out from Uttar Pradesh and made a separate state, Uttarakhand. And when we talk about Uttarakhand, we cannot miss Garhwal, which is a part of the province. But then again, it's a little separate because of the spirituality it has. So like a lot of people would have heard about Rishikesh, Dharamsala or Haridwar. People come to worship there from different places all over the world every year. So this is all part of Uttarakhand. And the main airport for Uttarakhand is Dehradun, located at 1700 meters again. The best way to travel to Uttarakhand is either by train or by air. Road travel takes a bit of a longer time than entering to Uttarakhand.
And what's interesting to me about Uttarakhand is, you know, in the southern part, you have Jim Corbett National Park, and then it just, the elevation keeps going up and up and up. And at the northern border, you have, you know, snow-capped peaks that it just seems kind of, you know, like the drive would be incredible because you're going through beautiful scenery and then you just get higher and higher and higher until you're right in the mountains. Are there any kind of high-altitude treks in Uttarakhand or treks that were, you know, entirely kind of in the mountains?
Okay, I'll start with the ascending level only itself. Like you mentioned, on the south side, there is a Jim Corbett National Park from where you take on a road and it's a beautiful journey through forest and then you reach the mountain caps. There is a two division to Uttarakhand. One is from the Jim Corbett, the south part, and from other is from itself the west part. So you can take either of the road. If you take the west part, it's more strenuous. If you take from the south part, it's more serenic. Yes, there are many high peak mountains. For example, Glacier, Rudraprayag Glacier is one of the highest peak mountains there, from which you enter through a Kumaon region. Kumaon is basically a district comprising of three provinces. If you type on internet, you will see, the first thing you'll see on Kumaon is the Kumaon Walks, the most beautiful walks in India so far, developed by Britishers. British developed their homes there and used to stay, and that's how this culture started, the Kumaon Walks. So it's basically a 3 days walk, 2 days walk, where you go with the villagers. The guides are the villagers who speak English, all thanks to the Britishers. So when you take those roads, they'll show you the peaks which you can see from the Kumaon region. Rudraprayag, Nandi Devi, all these are. But again, like I said before, these are all the mountain regions just because of the temples situated at these peaks. So Rudraprayag in itself is a temple situated at an elevation of 5,800 meters.
It sounds just incredible. How crowded, you know, how developed is the trekking in Uttarakhand? Is it a situation where there's lots of tourists, where you're kind of around people all the time? Or is this a place where, you know, it still is, you know, you can go on a trek and still kind of feel like you're discovering, you know, discovering these beautiful mountains for, you know, for the first time, where it's not just a conveyor belt of tourists doing the same trek as you are.
You're a certain bit right in what you're saying. I would not say it's a very well known to tourists. It's still in its developing stage when it comes to trekking. There is a reason to it. When there is a heavy monsoon, which is the month of June and August, certain treks are closed because of the nature of the terrain. The soil is quite loose there. So like, for example, Valley of Flowers, we don't take our tourists in the month of June and July and August because of the rainfall, because of the safety measures. So that is one reason that people, the main season, which is July and August of trekking, people are not able to visit that place. Second of all, because of the Ladakh being the biggest hub and most known to the world, people tend to ignore Uttarakhand. But I have been in a constant process, and fortunately, we are able to make it recognized to the certain part of the world and certain companies. It has been doing great in the last 5-6 years because of its untouched mountains, where you still find so much of greenery, and suddenly you come out of the forest and you see the snow-capped peak, which is like ascending to the summits, if you want to go, if somebody is ready for that.
And it seems like access to Uttarakhand is a lot easier. You know, it looks like there's roads right in there. And you mentioned earlier going by train, you know, driving there. How long, you know, if you're in Delhi, how long does it take to get to, you know, to the base of these treks?
To anyone, I would suggest to take a train from Delhi in the morning to Kathgodam, which makes you reach there in 4.5 hours. It's an express train with a beautiful view when you enter the Kumaon region. The Kathgodam is the station where you get down from there. It's just a 2 hours drive to Kumaon region from where all the trekking starts in Uttarakhand. Going by road till Kumaon region, it's almost a 16 to 17 hours road journey, which can be break down in two parts. But then again, you would miss on the experience of a great train journey. I would not ask you to do that.
I love going on train journeys. You know, one of the things that sucks about Canada is we don't have these great train journeys. And I used to live in Europe, and then, you know, exploring the world. It's just nice to sit on a train and, you know, watch the scenery go by. So that sounds incredible. Now, you know, looking east, we have Nepal. And just on the other side of Nepal, in between, you know, Nepal and Bhutan, is Sikkim. Now, this has always been a mystical place for me, you know, reading books of, you know, famous explorers in the Himalayas. Tell me a little bit about Sikkim and, you know, what trekking's like in there. What's it like to explore that area?
Okay, Sikkim is a combination of Kashmir and Ladakh. You combine both states and you get Sikkim. So half of the place is filled with lush green mountains, and half of the place is filled with hard rocky mountains, dry air. But then a good part about Sikkim is that as you steep ahead, you'll find so many lakes in between where you can take a bath if it's a good temperature there. The good part about Sikkim sharing its border with Nepal is that both share Kanchenjunga. You can ascend to Kanchenjunga either from Nepal or either from Sikkim. It's up to you where you want to go from. And then again, another beautiful part of Sikkim is then you can, from Sikkim, you can enter into Bhutan just by trekking. So India is offering you everything. Like I said before, Sikkim has basically to offer you, other than its mountains, which distinguish it from mountains like Kashmir, Ladakh, Uttarakhand, is the rawness of the people there. You will still find tribal culture there, which is not existing anymore in other parts of India. You will get to see on your trails. And most importantly, you will find many tea houses on the same trail. That's only in the northeast that the tea houses still exist in India. And that even run by the local people, not by the state-owned government houses, unlike Nepal, which is run by state houses. People there are running those tea houses just for mere 150 rupees, which is like $2.5 Canadian.
And then to get to Sikkim, it's kind of out of the way, kind of wedged in. You know, there's Bangladesh, you know, south, there's Bhutan on one side, China on the other, Kathmandu and Nepal on the west. You know, is this a place where you want to fly into, or can you take a train to Darjeeling and go from there?
You can take a train to Darjeeling, but it all depends how many days you have. We generally prefer client directly entering into Bagdogra Airport, which is the closest airport to Darjeeling, Sikkim, and Arunachal Pradesh. From there, the real road journey starts. We don't want anybody to miss that road journey. So we ask our clients to take flights directly to Bagdogra to save a few days. If you go by train to Darjeeling, there is no great view. All the great view starts from Darjeeling itself. So it will be a night journey, you will be sleeping. So we don't want that for our guests. So that's why the best preference is to go through air, arrive at Bagdogra, and start your land journey all the way through Darjeeling, then Sikkim, then Pamangse. So basically on this route, whenever you're traveling, starting from Darjeeling till up north Arunachal Pradesh, or on your right-hand side, basically the eastern side of these states, you'll see the Kanchenjunga all the way through. So all the way through you're traveling, you're able to see Kanchenjunga. So that is one of the basic things that one admires about traveling in northeast side of the India.
And then what are some popular treks in Sikkim?
One of the most important or the most popular is the Goichela trek, the one we had discussion over and over again. Then there is Sangilala, which is in Arunachal Pradesh. I would like to touch Arunachal at the very end because it's a very different sector. But then again, Sangilala is another very much, which starts from Sikkim, entering into Arunachal Pradesh. Then there is Indru Glacier Trek, which is just on the opposite side of Kanchenjunga. You start with Pamyangse, which is in Sikkim itself. So these are the three most popular treks that you have in Sikkim.
Interesting. And you mentioned Arundel Pradesh, which is a region. I've seen a lot of stuff on YouTube of people exploring India's northeast and just being amazed by it. And I know nothing about that part, but it's just, again and again, people are like, this is a place you have to go visit. Can you maybe share a little bit about this part of India?
Absolutely. I'll start this with you mentioning about Uttarakhand, that Uttarakhand is an untouched place. We call Arunachal Pradesh, Mizoram, and Chikmagalur to be the untouched place. Not even many Indian tourists go there. Only the real adventure people go there. And it's not that it's very difficult. It's just that its rawness is not for everyone. The people are very remotely situated there, surviving on their own with certain bit of help of government. But ultimately, it's very disconnected from the entire India. But then again, it has its own plus point because it's disconnected. Like I said, the rawness of the people is still maintained. You will find the Indo-Aryan race still existing there. It's not a huge population, but then again, it's the beautiful dances they have, from the beautiful food they have, and all the rawness from the rivers that they get. In fact, once you are there, the tribal people make you stay for some time so that they can show you how they make the pickle out of the fish in front of you in just 2 hours. And that's the food that they eat every day, the local food that they eat every day. And the bamboo palm alcohol that you get there. So it's all the part of your trekking that you can see all these kind of so tribal things and the rawness that you find amongst the people. And don't forget small boys and girls holding your hand and taking away to your homes. You cannot say no to them.
It's really far away from everything else. What's the best way to access this part of India? Is it a flight? And you know, then even you know, looking at a map, there's not a lot of towns. You know, it seems like the towns are spaced far apart. But you know, how would you recommend somebody get to Arunachal Pradesh?
The best way to go to Arunachal is arrive at Sikkim Airport, which is a newly airport now. It's been almost a year that the airport has been open now. And again, the specialty of that airport is that once you're entering, you're inside two big mountains. The landscape is inside two mountains. That's the beautiful part of it. Once you land from there, it's a two-way journey divided in two parts. And you enter Arunachal. That's the best part to enter Arunachal. This is something you would not experience on everyday travel because the road from Sikkim till Arunachal in itself is so beautiful, so beautiful. At a point when you are entering Arunachal, you are able to see the peaks of Everest as well at a certain level.
Oh, wow. So the next question that people always ask is when can I go on these treks? And I know in India, you know, there's the monsoon, there's, you know, certain times, you know, you definitely don't want to be trekking. Does the trekking seasons change in each of the regions we've discussed?
Generally, no. So I'll give you the basic idea and then I'll start talking about each region. The basic time traveling for all the trekking people is from starting April to mid-October. That is the best time for India for trekking. Let's start with Kashmir. 1st April till 15th October, all good. Ladakh, 1st April to 15th October, all good. 1st April to 15th October, Uttarakhand, not all time good. Leave July and August. It's not an advisable time. You have to leave July and August because it's a heavy monsoon time. Come to northeast part of India. 1st April to 15th October, all good time to go. Except maybe in between you might experience few rain showers, but they are not heavy. And again, then there are certain treks like snow leopard trek, which can only be done in the winters. So there are certain treks, again, like Chadar trek. It's a frozen river trek, one of the most famous treks, but has lost its value because of the lot of tourism at one point of time. But then again, it's regaining its essence because the climate change has not brought any big major change on the frozen rake. So I would say, yes, more or less, 1st April to 15th October, it's all good, most of the parts, except little parts of Uttarakhand. And then there are parts where you can reach out in the winters, which has its essence in the winters only. Like I mentioned, one of the two treks, one is the snow leopard and one is the Chadar trek on the frozen river of Zanskar.
Excellent. Excellent. And then in terms of how much time people should be planning, you know, going to India, you know, you don't just want to go only for the trek. You know, there's so many incredible places to see and, you know, combining a trek with exploring, you know, different places within India. But how long, you know, from the time they land in Delhi to the time they're back from their trek, how long do most people allocate for that part of their trip?
I would say at least 9 to 12 days is an optimal time to experience India. Be it trekking or be it other parts of it, 9 to 12 days is the minimum that one should have to experience it very naturally and peacefully. You don't need to rush up. If you are less than that, then you have to rush sometimes.
Yeah, no, it's I always find with India, the more time you spend there, you kind of get into the rhythm, get into, you know, you can see the difference between, you know, even from city to city, it can be very, very different. Where I'd say yeah, almost 2 weeks would be the bare minimum. I think 3 or 4 weeks, if you can get the time, that's a really nice time. And you can't see it all. It's a massive country. So, you know, people think, oh, I'll be able to see from southern India all the way up to the Himalayas. It's like, no, that's like seeing all of North America in a month. It's just not possible.
Let me give you a very correct answer on this. Yes, you cannot see all India. I've been residing in India for almost 32 years. I have not seen all India. But to your, for our listeners, to give you the factual answers, yes, if you are for more than 3 weeks, it's very good. You can do a lot of things, just not the trekking. You can experience other parts of India too, combining with trekking. For example, if you are in 2 weeks in, let's say, either in Kashmir, Ladakh, or either in Uttarakhand, or maybe in northeast of India, you can go there for 12 days to 14 days and then keep 4 or 5 days either for beach or either to experience Taj Mahal, which are the iconic things in India. So 3 weeks is the best time if you can spend that.
So, you know, we've talked about so much of the Indian Himalayas, so many regions. It's a massive, massive region. If someone's coming for their first trekking trip in India, what's a good kind of beginner trek? You know, someone, they've done a lot of hiking in, you know, in North America or walking in the UK. They're fit, but, you know, this is their first time in the Himalaya. What's a good trek for them that's going to allow them to experience the grandeur of, you know, the Himalayas and the big mountains without being, you know, too difficult?
Like I said, this is where our diversity and long range of Himalayas help us and to other parts of tourists. You can start with Ladakh Markha Valley Trek, which we discussed in the earlier part of our discussion, which is a very soft trek. No problem. Even a beginner can do that. Then there is Stoke Kangri. You don't need to go all the way to the summit. You can just go to the base. Again, it's not that difficult. All you need is maybe 10 to 12 days. You need to be little fit and you can do that. Markha Valley is, again, like I said, it's very easy, no problem. Then there is Ladakh village experience, which goes from one village to another again. But as a trekking only, you are crossing small mountains to reach another village, which are there partner villages from, like I said, from you start with Lamayuru, you go to Dixit, you go to Drechen, then you come back to Leh. So all these things are very easy to done. When it comes to Himachal, there are so many easy treks that you can't even think of possibly. It's like more than 200. But I'll give you the basic one. Hanta Pass, 6 days, 7 days trek, very easy, very nice walking. You get to see mountains, snow-capped mountains. You get to see the forest again. Then there is Pinparvati trek as well. It's up to you whether you want to go till the pass or you want to end it before the pass. If you are ending before the pass, it's very easy. If you're crossing the pass, then it becomes moderately difficult. In Himachal, then there is another trek which is called Rudrastan. Rudrastan is the basically a small top which takes only 3 to 4 days combined with other parts of Himachal where you go till the lake. So all these are very small, small treks, very easy for everyone. Like we talked about Kumaon region in Uttarakhand. These are 6 days, 7 days trek, which are very doable very for anyone. Like for anyone means even for 70-year-old guy who has not been going out for trekking, but going for all day walks. So it's very easy for them too.
Now, kind of on the opposite scale, if someone's, you know, spent a lot of time trekking at altitude before, they've explored some of the, you know, more serious treks in Nepal or down in the Andes, what's one or two kind of difficult treks that are going to allow them to get into really spectacular places? You know, they might be, you know, 2 or 3 weeks long. They might go up to high altitude, but really be something that's dramatic.
So for the people who are quite trained and experienced in trekking and they love this kind of adventure, again, there is a lot of routes, but I would start with Nun Kun. It's 6,000 elevation. It's very much doable. Stokangri is as of close till 2022. But again, very much for the people who love to travel, it's again at 6,300 meters. Rudraprayag that we were discussing in Uttarakhand is again at 6,100 meters. All these are the trails which one can do easily without so much of uplifting of tents and all kind of equipment that one require for the summit. These are, again, an optional way to go to the summits as well. They have a summit too, but it's up to them whether till which point they want to go.
And so for these longer ones, you're still staying in guest houses or staying in home shares, or do you have to stay in tents for some of these treks?
No, most of the treks, which I just mentioned, like Stokangri, Lamayuru, Kangyante, you're all staying in the local houses or either in the guest houses, either of the case. But if you want to go to the peak, the last part of it, you have to use the tent if somebody wants to upscale to that level.
When you look at trekking in India, what do you do with your bags each day? Are there porters? Are there, you know, yaks or donkeys or horses that carry your bags? How do you get your bags to go from village to village?
Again, depends on the terrain, but the general answer is ponies. Yes, we use mules for carrying the load of... for example, if you are going on a trekking to a very remote place, we use ponies. Otherwise, there is a guide and then there are three people who are taking care of your luggage through mules. And it's very much reachable. So it's only for very remote an expedition or maybe for summits where we need a lot of stuff. Otherwise, it's all accessible. There is always one car which takes care of all your stuff to a certain level. And other than that, we use mules. We have a lot of mules in India.
Actually, this has been absolutely incredible to hear about all these different areas of India. Makes me just, you know, want to get back and just explore all these different mountain ranges, taste all the different food. You know, a real highlight is just all the different flavors you get in India. Thank you so much for sharing this.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's wonderful to be able to travel without traveling, which I think is just fantastic.
You have been a good host for me, and that's why we have such a lovely conversation. And let me just close this by saying that ultimately, when you arrive in India and the slogan we have, Namaste, and the nature of welcoming our guests, you would only experience once you actually land. And I would promise that nothing compares to it.
It's true. You know, just the people of India are what make it so special. Also, they've just announced that they have eased some of the travel restrictions. So it's still early days, but, you know, you can now get to India without needing a quarantine, just with a PCR. It's a great time now to start thinking about, you know, oh, maybe India can be this bucket list trip I can celebrate, you know, having spent a year and a half in, you know, dealing with COVID. I can think of no, you know, few better places that allow you to experience so much. And, you know, it's just been great again, Akshay. I can't wait to get back to India and explore this incredible country.
I'll be waiting for you with my hands folded.
Excellent. Now, I'm also going to add a bunch of links to the treks Akshay mentioned in the show notes so that people can follow up. You know, we mentioned a whole bunch of them, but, you know, let people to see, you know, to click on actually understand what each of these treks are, because they are quite different. Please check the show notes and you can just start seeing the videos and photos and exploring these wonderful treks. That's all for now. Catch you next time on the 10 Adventures podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. If you liked it, why not give us a review? Better yet, subscribe and get inspired again and again. Also, if you want to find your own adventures, why not check out 10adventures.com, where you can use our free resources to plan your own trip or book a tour in over 60 countries and make your own epic memories on your next adventure.